You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie and Tobiah. We're here for Solidarity Breakfast on 3CR, your community radio station. And if you looked out the door, you'll realise this is our weather report. It's the best day. It's really nice.
It's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to rain tomorrow, but it's really nice today.
It's good. I'm glad to get out the house and it not be shockingly cold.
Yeah, you've been very busy, haven't you?
Yeah. Lots of stuff going on. We've been keeping up to date a lot with the Philip program about what's going on in Italy, because yesterday was the general strike.
Yep.
The second round. And today is the national rally that's been convocated in Rome.
Yep. So, and there's been some fantastic pictures of people of all sorts, all different age groups in many locations.
Yeah. You're talking about, 100,000 in Bologna, 70,000 in Torino. They're saying 500k in Rome, which is 500,000 people in the streets, is crazy.
Even and also little towns.
In little towns, yeah. Look, I got photos of my little cousins that are 14, 15 in San Casciano, which is Eltham or something. Do you know what I mean? Very little places that are full of people that are out in support. And I guess it's amazing to see this sort of community response, but it doesn't come out of the blue. And it's been a lot of organizational work. Like we were listening to in your Stick Together program, that's the work that it takes. It's the day-to-day work. It's the knowing that people can trust you. It's the knowing that you're creating these connections and not expecting people to already be where you're at. The situation is absolutely atrocious with the genocide that continues in Palestine, but that shouldn't condition our response to be one of expecting people to already be where we are, considering the amount of propaganda and the neoliberal soup that we live in.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And of course, this is because the Samud Freedom Flotilla has been unceremoniously stopped by the Israeli IOF, and they have been kidnapped and taken away. And as earlier reports from people who have been in this same situation in earlier times, when people have attempted to try and bring support to the Palestinians, the people will be taken to a place where they're supposed to be signing a document that says we have illegally entered Israel. But of course, the person who was recounting their experience, they said, no, I wasn't. I didn't come illegally. You kidnapped me from international waters. And the female guard goes, get fucked. Splitting hers.
Yeah, well, 50 ships and most of them water cannoned throughout the night. They tried, obviously, they knew that all the, by they I mean the IDF, knew that all eyes were on the flotilla as it represented a prime PR stunt for everyone. Apparently, it's reported that one ship got through, but still waiting on confirmation of the lone ship that did get through. But the response throughout Europe, which is majority of the ports have been are connected by the sea, has been one of blocking. So they've blocked trains, streets, bus lines, harbours, all with the help of the unions. There was some incredible video shared by the USB, which is the rank and file union that initially called the rally, of them organizing to bring precarious migrant African workers to the rally. So the African workers wanted to come. The USB organized buses to take them to the rally, and they headed the protest. That is the kind of work that it takes. Now, this week we've seen a lot of interest. Massimo from PhilF was on yesterday on the Green Left radio doing an interview about it. We spoke at the Sunday rally because people want to know how we can move that here. It's hard because the situations are so different. The social fabric is different. The conditions are different. The material conditions are different, and the union structures are different. But there are things that we can do here, and that is organize broadly across all institutions and all organizations that you're part of, and start creating the links. Because the rally is not the end point. The rally is the manifestation of all the work that we've done collectively.
And we're going to have a listen to Renata, who spoke at the Sunday rally later in the program, and she addresses some of the issues that Tobias is talking about here. Let's go to some other headlines. There was a fascinating outpouring of support for Palestine at the UK Labour Conference. Party policy now officially accepts the landmark UN Commission of Inquiry report confirming the reality of Israel's genocide and demands the government imposes comprehensive sanctions on Israel, including a full arms embargo. P.S. The Labour leadership tried every trick in the book, it's reported, to prevent this decision from being reached. They ruled out motions, tabled their own watered-down motion, and hand-picked speakers in the debate who they knew supported their motion, but it didn't work. People will be familiar with this methodology at conferences of this sort.
It was an incredible conference. It also had a delegation from the Palestine General Trades Union that gave an incredible speech. I did my last Stick Together episode on it, where you can hear it, as well as Daniel Cabetti, who is the National Education Union's General Secretary, do a really incredible speech that brings it home, what it means, union solidarity for Palestine.
I listened to a very interesting report. Excuse me, by an English investigative journalist who was following the rather shadowy chief of staff of Stammer's chief of staff, who was the person who orchestrated what's called Labour Together. And it's an organisation which has been plagued with, this is in England, which has been plagued with insinuation that it has not actually divulged its full contributors. Like millions of dollars have been contributed to their supposed, bringing members of the Labour Party together, except that it's been traced to corporate interests and particular Zionist interests, and that despite obfuscation, they actually have not followed the Electoral Commission in London, England's rules. They've been chased for transparency. But it was this group of people from Labour Together that helicoptered Stammer in led the rather targeted and brutal attack on Corbyn that unseated him under the guise of anti-Semitism. So it's quite an interesting political coup that was done in England to change the arrangements in English Labour. But of course, now there's this other party that has been created, which may, of course, refocus some of that energy that was in Corbyn's Labor.
Yeah, it's a pretty look.
It's a blood sport.
Yeah, that's it, and it really goes to show how much pressure that people need to be exerting on our politicians. I'll just read you an excerpt from Vijay Prashad's latest Tricontinental Institute of Social Research newsletter. On the 16th of September, the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory published a 72-page report packed with facts that concluded on reasonable grounds that the Israeli government, its officials, and the military had committed and are continuing to commit acts of genocide with the intention of committing these acts. The judgment is far more encompassing than the International Court of Justice January 2025 finding of plausible evidence of genocide. The commission is led by Navi Pillay, a former judge on the South African High Court and at the International Criminal Court, who served as a UN High Commissioner for Human Rights from 2008 to 2014. She was clear and direct in her press statement following the release of the report. Quoting, "The commission finds that Israel is responsible for the commission of genocide in Gaza. It is clear that there is an intent to destroy the Palestinians in Gaza through acts that meet the criteria set forth in the Genocide Convention." Back to Vijay. "There is no need to argue the case further. These are the strongest possible words."
We've got our own little stoush going on at the moment in Sydney. You may be aware that St. Vincent's Hospital and the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute have gone to ground following their controversial anti-Semitism claims against suspended cardiologist Peter McDonald. This is a report that was put together by Wendy Bacon and Kathy Peters, and it's reported in the Michael West online paper. They go on to say that the St. Vincent's has now, leading Australian cardiologist Professor Peter McDonald has not been at work at St. Vincent's for a month after he made a 30-second comment about a potential link between Israel's intelligence agency Mossad and two anti-Semitic incidents in Australia at a Palestinian Justice Movement Forum in Sydney. Now, a few days later, the pro-Israel medical lobby group Alliance Against Anti-Semitism in Healthcare complained to his employers, St. Vincent's Australia and the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute, accusing him of anti-Semitism. The institutions quickly issued media releases labelling McDonald's comments as anti-Semitic, racist and bigoted, anti-Semitic and conspiratorial, and antithetical to our aim of fostering community well-being. The St. Vincent's has now initiated an inquiry into whether McDonald's conduct breached its workplace code of conduct, which states that fairness is the bar we set ourselves. But in this case, says the report, St. Vincent's and its partner, Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute's ill-considered media releases have remained on their websites, raised serious questions about how any such inquiry can be fair, open-minded and independent. Now, it goes on. This is the bit that's really fascinating about this report. And as it says, as the Michael West media does not allege that any of the individuals or organisations mentioned in this article have been involved in the action against McDonald. In the absence of transparency, however, it is important to reveal what influence the lobby might exercise over St. Vincent's and the broader health system, especially in the light of the cancellation of Grand Rounds seminars on the impact of war on children at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne and the Forum on Medical Care in Gaza at Perse Fiona Stanley Hospital after anti-Semitism complaints. The St. Vincent's Board is ultimately responsible for the public statement. The St. Vincent's Health Australia is a network of hospitals, including the two major St. Vincent's hospitals in Sydney and Melbourne, a number of private hospitals and aged care and community health services. Chris Blake has been replaced by Paul O'Sullivan. Now, Paul O'Sullivan has a long relationship with the Australian Israel Chamber of Commerce, the AICC. And more recently, Blake, who he's replaced, has been featured at their events. The AICC, the Australian Israel Chamber of Commerce, is a large and influential pro-Zionist organisation dedicated to building business relationships with Israel. O'Sullivan is best known for his work at Optus, where he worked for three decades, as the AFR described him as the most influential figure in a crisis-ridden company over the last 20 years. He was the CEO from 2004 to 2012 and chairman from 2014 until he stepped down August 2025. He is currently chair of the ANZ and Western Sydney Airport. He attracted media attention in September 2023 when Optus suffered its first emergency outage. In late September, the federal court imposed a $100 million penalty on Optus for unconscionable conduct in misleading vulnerable Australians into buying phones. Also, as chair of the ANZ, he was the one who was overseeing the when the ATSIC recorded a $240 million fine for unconscionable conduct, including for failing to refund fees to thousands of deceased customers. Anyway, it's all fairly murky, that. But it's basically the Optus has had a business partnership with the AICC, the Israeli business outfit. In 2011, O'Sullivan said in a speech to the AICC on behalf of Optus, "The chamber is amazing. I have done a couple of trips now to Israel with the chamber and each time have been so impressed with the efficiency with which they connect Australian companies and Israeli companies." As revealed by Michael West Media earlier this year, in 2012, the AICC and the Israel Trade Commission hosted a cyber roadshow tour of 12 Israeli weapons and cyber security companies, including Israel's largest weapon company, Elbit Systems. It's if you want to get the full report, go to Michael West Media and you will see there's further connections between all these different people who are in key positions throughout the medical areas of administration, as well as Australian universities.
And you can also go online and check out the doctors, what was said. It just wasn't that, it just wasn't that crazy.
No, it's right. I mean, it's a bit like Antoinette Latouf, who said, oh my goodness.
Or Mary Costakides, yeah, or any.
The emperor has no clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty incredible stuff. And if you want to hear more from Wendy Bacon, she's got amazing reports with friend of the show Ahmed Alabadla online. You can also hear Sydney criminal lawyer Nick Hanna, who's got a podcast called The What and the Why, who does probably one of the most comprehensive investigations into the ousting of the Iranian ambassador and the intelligence information that was supplied and how actually flimsy it is.
It's terribly insidious to, I mean, talk about bad actors undermining your national democratic processes. It's insidious, I'll have to say. And I just want to finish our headlines with a much more local and much more scary. I mean, well, how can it be scarier, really? But I don't know if you've been keeping tabs at all on the algae bloom that's destroying and killing the wildlife, the seafront in South Australia. But, of course, we live in a world, so, of course, it's having effect all over the place. But there was an article here, Sea Lion Protection Plan Amid Tons of Dead Sea Life. This was from a South Australian source. The beach cleanups amass some 1,600 kilometres of sea life, including long snout boarfish, whitings and leatherjack fish in the past 7 days, according to an algae bloom briefing to the Adelaide Coastal Council's network on Friday morning. The Australian sea lion is an iconic marine species, drawing visitors from around the world to our shores, and these measures are vital to help their recovery during their unprecedented algae bloom event, because they're going to do a comprehensive plan announced on Friday by Federal Environment Minister or Environmonster Murray Watt and his state counterpart Lucy Hood, would involve inoculating sea lion pups against hookworm to improve their survival, controlling feral cats to reduce disease spread, and installing shelters at high-risk sites, including the Spencer Gulf Sea Bay. It's sort of a bit like, closing the door after the horse has bolted, right? We are determined to protect and regenerate Australian sea lion numbers, and this program is supporting targeted conservation efforts. In terms of the mass of dead sea life, it was collected by 36 people each day, including members of the Kulwa Pipi Co, who have been out of work during the algae bloom outbreak, as machine retrieval and volunteer groups also work to collect the dead creatures made up of numerous marine species across the state. The latest figures come from over 2 tonnes of dead sea life was collected by hand last week, according to a state government algae bloom reference group briefing. About 550 different species were now reported to have died from the bloom, according to the iNaturalist South Australian Marine Mortality Events page, a citizen scientist project created by marine biologist Janine Baker. It's called the iNaturalist South Australia Marine Mortality Events page. These scientists, who aren't working for the Department of Environment, they're working off their own love for this ocean, because they are the ones that keep rocking up and keep trying really hard. Says Wilkes. Federal Environment Minister Murray Watson, Bloom BMP Lucy Miller-Frost posing with Disaster Relief Australia cleanup crews on Thursday. That was the picture, another photo opportunity. The state's new algae bloom hotline was announced on Thursday. The state government's postman said further beach cleanup work was being considered for South Australian regions. The state government has put significant effort in, apparently. The group is veteran-led and has made almost 270 trips to 24 South Australian beaches in the past 3 weeks in a clean-up effort, dubbing Operation Harris. So it's become a military exercise. And they're all really worried about what's going to happen when summer hits, because nobody will be able to swim. Now, as I was saying to Tobiah before I was collecting this data, that the headline should be People's Priorities and Nature's Disregard.
Especially coming into summer, when the oceans desperately need our help in maintaining dwindling populations, as we spoke to Faith Coleman a couple months ago.
The Environmental Film Festival is back, running from the 16th to the 23rd of October across Melbourne, Footscray, Fitzroy and Elwood. Enjoy Australia's premier environmental cinema showcase with 23 films, 14 premieres, 4 talks and 2 community gatherings, all exploring ideas of urban living, nature and beyond. Plus celebrate the team's 15th year with a very special anniversary party. In this time of climate crises, reconsider the world around you and experience how environment is everywhere with the Environmental Film Festival 2025. Tickets on sale now at environmentalfilms.org.au.
Presented by Environmental Films Australia, a 3CR supporter.
You're on 3CR, your community radio station, with Annie and Tobiah, and we're going to go to our Voices for Palestine. There was a rally on Thursday that took in response to the kidnapping of the Freedom Flotilla people. Apparently, according to the Instagram posts, because I wasn't there, there was a bit of police argy-bargy outside Flinders Street. There were five-on-one protester type thing. They obviously don't have enough to go around. But anyway, we're going to go to a voice of Dr. Say, who is a person who has first-hand experience of being in Gaza quite recently, and follow it up with Hannah Thomas. This is from the Sydney rally, the 28th, the last one, and it is recorded by Vivian Langford from the Climate Action Show, which is on at 5 p.m. on Mondays on 3CR.
So with that, I want to welcome up to the stage a doctor who herself has been in Gaza rendering that aid, volunteering her time. Please make welcome Dr. Syra to the stage.
My name is Syra. I'm a medical doctor and I've volunteered in Gaza twice, once back in November 2024. July this year. People ask me if I will return to Gaza again. Part of me has never left. Just this morning, I was helping the daughter of a colleague, Nada, her name is, refine her English sentences via WhatsApp chat. She was a couple of months into studying her English degree when her university was bombed by Israel. After her, I gave a mini tutorial on the management of traumatic brain injury to a nurse. His name is Abdul Rahman, helping him prepare for exams that may never happen. In the aftermath of one of the many mass casualty incidents that occurred, I can't recall whether it was the result of an F-35 jet bombing or a mass shooting at one of the GHF aid distribution sites. I was standing with my Palestinian colleague, Mohammed, amongst the pools of blood on the floor, the flies, listening to the screaming of people waking up from anaesthetic without pain relief, reflecting on the horrific injuries that had maimed and shredded children that day. I stood there and I said to my friend, who was finishing his 24-hour shift on one small meal of rice, do you think a two-state solution will help end the suffering in Palestine and ensure peace across all communities? He said to me, Dr. Syra, we are tired. Our children are starving. Our friend Ahmed, the nurse, was followed home by a quadcopter and killed along with 23 children yesterday as he entered his tent. We don't understand why we're being hunted and murdered like this. Balash kalimat. This is Arabic for words are cheap or words are meaningless. It couldn't be a more fitting expression because healthcare workers' testimonies change nothing. The words of the UN, the ICC, the ICJ change nothing. International arrest warrants change nothing, and the genocide rages. We need the collective power of the people, like our brothers and sisters on the Samud flotilla, to sacrifice more of our privilege, more of our comfort, more of our time and energy for the people of Palestine, so that they can claim back the safety, dignity, liberty, and land that is rightfully theirs.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker, who has been fighting against our Labour government right now, who is complicit in this genocide, Hannah Thomas. People might know Hannah Thomas as a former Greens candidate who ran against Albanese in his seat of Granloo. But also, she's a staunch activist that was brutalized by the police for trying to protest against an end of the weapons ties and the weapons supply chain that is happening in Australia. So make her feel welcome.
Thank you. We're gathering on land that is and always will be Gadigal land. Land that was never ceded and land that was violently stolen. Solidarity with First Nations people here and in Palestine. It's been 722 days of a live stream genocide, and it's not 65,000 people dead, it's not even 100,000 people dead, Australian academics estimate 680,000 Palestinians have been killed by the vile, terrorist, apartheid state of Israel. 680,000, that's 1 in 4 people in Gaza. Children, toddlers, babies, men, women, the elderly, all wiped out. Entire families erased, whole neighborhoods obliterated. So many buried alive under the rubble, left to die and then rot without dignity, while the world lets Israel get away with the most heinous atrocities. And this is not war. It's not conflict, and it's sure as hell not complicated. This is extermination, it's annihilation, it's genocide, and it's a genocide that our government continues to arm with millions of dollars in taxpayer money. Just this week, our government recognized Palestine and then handed Israel's largest arms manufacturer $10 million in taxpayer funds. Truly, I cannot think of a more shameless act of betrayal. Recognition means nothing when you're handing Elbit Systems $10 million, and it means nothing when you bankroll the bombs that are raining down on Gaza every single day. What this government must do straight away is recognize genocide and do everything in its power to stop it. Because let's be clear, Palestine itself does not need our recognition. Palestine has existed long before so-called Australia. Palestinian rights are inherent and they are inalienable. They don't depend on the generosity of treacherous Western states which themselves squat on stolen land while arming the Zionist enemy. Palestine does not need white butchers dressed up as white saviors. And they sure as hell do not need Tony Blair, the butcher of Iraq, who Donald Trump's White House wants to parachute in to run a so-called Gaza Transition Authority. Just imagine the audacity, the same man who lied his way into an illegal war, whose legacy is mass graves in Iraq, now offered up as the manager of Gaza's future, and our own Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has said he's open to that possibility. The British have already done enough harm for eternity. Gaza belongs to Palestinians, and Tony Blair belongs in prison. Now, in recent weeks, we've had some crucial legal wins in the West, and they've shattered Zionist impunity and demonstrated that the tide is turning in favor of truth, justice, and all of us protesting for Palestine. In London, a terror-related charge against NECAP band member Mohara, which was designed to silence his advocacy on Palestine, was thrown out by the courts a couple of days ago. And last week, the ABC was ordered to pay Antoinette Latouf a $150,000 fine for unlawfully sacking her for the crime of sharing the truth about Israel's deliberate policy of starvation. And charges against SEC plating protesters, including myself, have been dropped, while a police officer has now been charged for his violence at that protest. And in relation to that SEC protest, we now know that police were explicitly instructed to show zero tolerance to protesters for Palestine. Now let me be clear that this is police acting on the instructions of Labour governments who have zero tolerance for protests and infinite tolerance for Israel's genocide. So these legal victories are a vindication for every single person here and for every single person who has been smeared, defamed, arrested, or threatened for standing with Palestine. But we know that the repression continues, and today I want to raise a particular case. I hope you all know that in Sydney right now, desperately ill patients are being deprived of life-saving care from one of the country's top cardiologists, Professor Peter MacDonald, because Zionist losers threw a hissy fit about a valid question he asked at a Palestine forum that was completely unrelated to his profession.
utterly despicable as that? Shame on every health institution succumbing to pressure from the very same thugs who are cheering on the deliberate destruction of Gaza's healthcare system. Everyone here, please sign the open letter calling on St. Vincent's Hospital and Victor Chang Institute to resist the pressure from Zionist bullies and defend Professor McDonald, who is currently on forced leave. Now, just over a week from now, we will hit 2 years of a live stream genocide in Gaza. 2 years of our pathetic government sending thoughts and prayers to Palestine while they send weapons to Israel. Yeah. Enough is enough. It's time to escalate, and it's time to match the scale of this atrocity with the scale of our resistance. It is time to strike for Gaza, like we've seen Italian workers do, and it's time to bring this country to a standstill. It's time to physically intervene to break the siege, like the incredibly brave people in the Sumud Flotilla are doing right now. It's time to block every weapons factory in this country and to boycott every company which is complicit in this atrocity. And it's time for world leaders to step up, like the Colombian president has, saying he will open a list of volunteers to fight alongside Palestinians for their liberation, and saying he'd go there himself. Imagine if our leaders were doing that across the world. That is the kind of courage we need, and it's the kind of courage that the Palestinian resistance itself has shown, day after day after day, for 722 days, and for 77 years before that. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
3CR Community Radio, giving voice to the community since 1976.
Per noi, una di vetro a indicarci la via e l'approdo. Chiudi gli occhi, mio piccolo pane, lasciati andare e vedrai il bosco nell'acqua che non aspetta. Ogni gemma un grano di riso, nel mio sogno ero in cima a un ulivo e non potevo restare. Devo cadere.
You're on 3CR with Annie and Tobiah on Solidarity Breakfast, and we're going to go to a speech
by Renata. The song you just heard before was a little snippet of a beautiful song called Samira Piccola by an artist called Lali. She's the singer of 80s post-punk band Franti. You'll find all the stuff on our podcast later, but now we'll go on to Sunday to the rally at State Library, and we'll hear Renata Musolino, who's a 40-year veteran of the OH&S Division of Trades Hall.
Thank you. Okay, on behalf of Philip Naam, I acknowledge that we are meeting on the stolen land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation that was never ceded, and pay my respects to the elders past and present. We stand in staunch solidarity with First Nations people and recognise that our struggles are linked. We also extend our solidarity to the 15 comrades arrested in Bologna and Milan this week. Resistance is not a crime. Many Italians here, our grandparents joined the resistance and fought for the freedom and the dignity of their people. In recognition of their fight against the Nazi fascist occupation, many cities in Italy were awarded what's called a gold medal for the resistance, and Genova is one of those cities. For us, these medals are a reminder of our civil duty to stand up for anyone whose freedom is under threat. The dock workers in Geneva have been blocking ships carrying arms for several years, well before the start of the current genocide. But a few weeks ago, they made a promise. They said that the Gaza siege must be broken. As the Italian boats were leaving to join the Sumud flotilla, they also promised that if the boats were attacked, they would call a general strike and block not only the ports, but the country. Just days later, two boats stationed in Tunis were attacked by drones. The Confederation of the Rank and File Grassroots Union Movement, USB, called a general strike for Palestine. So this Monday, September 22nd, hundreds of thousands of workers downed tools and protested in the streets. There were over 200,000 people in Rome, over 50,000 in Milan, over 20,000 in Bologna, Torino, and Naples. Tens of thousands more rallied in over 80 cities and small countries, small villages across the country. This wasn't only a demonstration of solidarity with Palestine. They blocked four commercial ports, Genova, Livorno, Trieste, and Civitavecchia. And ports on Italy's east side also shut down in solidarity. They closed three central highways. They closed down universities. Students closed down high schools. 80% of public transport was closed. Infrastructure shut down for the whole day. The success of the general strike showed that organizing in a broad way, using a diversity of tactics, approaches and strategies, using social media, community radio stations and building support led to an amazing outcome. To those on the outside, it may seem like the call was spontaneous, but in fact, it was over 2 years in preparation. Building a broad network of communication and mutual respect for everyone working in their respective communities, educating, informing, so that once a national or regional call is made, many people are prepared. So that call was made for September 22nd, and together workers and students, even priests I heard, shut down the country, all with one message: blocchiamo tutto, restiamo umani. We block everything, we'll remain human. They showed that the time of compromises and warm statements is long gone, that people stand with solidarity, not propaganda. They showed the fascist government of Italy, the third biggest seller of weapons to Israel, that no matter how many anti-protest laws they adopt, the people will keep standing up. The numbers were so great that any attempt to repress or to twist the narrative has been unsuccessful. Within 24 hours, the government dispatched two military ships to accompany the flotilla, at least while they're in international waters, and stated that while it still believes that Hamas started the war, Israel has gone too far and breached humanitarian norms, causing a massacre of civilians. So this, in 24 hours, the Italian government was afraid. If there is one thing to take away from Monday, it's that it showed that it is possible for those without any real power to block a country. It is possible and necessary to stand all together and block genocide. A second general strike has been called for the 3rd of October and a national rally in Rome the day after. Workers, students and citizens in Livorno declared the city a no-weapon zone and are permanently blocking the docks. Delegations of dock workers from different countries in the Mediterranean are meeting in Genova now to coordinate an international strike against the weapons trade. Under the general strike, workers and students will carry on with local strikes, blockades, rallies and disruptions. Can we do the same here? Maybe not quite the same, because the history of unions and strikes, how the union movement can mobilise in Italy, and the conditions and laws are different to what we have in Australia. We have a completely different set of circumstances. Our society is different, and our geographical location on the other side of the world all mean that the tools that we have are different, and so the actions we take must be different. But the leaders of the movement in Italy have made it clear to the many thousands who turned out, one day is not enough. We must keep up the pressure. And the only way to do this is to boycott, divest, and sanction. This must be the way to keep pressure on the Israeli state. This is what we need to do in Australia. This is what our unions need to get behind, and our governments. The commitment to human rights cannot be an afterthought. It is a daily practice, a practice of every breath. It is believing in a shared humanity and fighting for its dignity. Italy proved to us Italians, and indeed to the world, that we want liberation, that the occupation extends into our lives, and that we are all connected beyond the Mediterranean and across the world. The same government that allows the incarceration of First Nations children, the demolition of public housing, and the illegal administration of a democratically elected union is the same one that lies about exporting weapons to Israel and sells out stolen land to prepare for a US war against China. This is truly a time of monsters, and we must fight for a world that struggles to be born out of the dying. The work we do will decide what kind of world it will be. Block everything, stay human, until victory, until liberation. Long live Palestine. Long live the resistance. Palestina libera dal fiume fino al mare.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
There was an incident where a police had shot a black man in the back, and then went and plant a gun next to him and said that the guy had drawn a gun on him, which we found out after investigation, the guy didn't have no gun. Police had shot him in cold blood.
Remember the news. Wake up, nigga! The police shot another nigga today in the South Bronx. Wake up, nigga! And his only weapon was his wallet. Wake up. Who gonna be next?
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake
Stay
up.
Stay tuned.
Backseat of the lap, big gat in my lap, ready for combat, feeling like Geronimo Pratt. We had the windows cracked, headed up to the strip, black rag in my hand, don't want no prints on the clip. Hollow tips, cause we thorough with this shit, my nigga. This ain't no game, we bang for you, who, my nigga? Now take a left with the light, turn off the headlights and ride real slow. Now holla at me when you see the 5-0. Alright, dirty, y'all boys ready? We bout to turn drive-bys revolutionary. Yeah, motherfucker, yeah! Yeah, motherfucker, yeah. Look at them run, too scared to pull their guns. Out of shape from them coffees and them cinnamon buns. This shit is fun, how I feel when the tables is turned. Hollow tips hit your flesh through your vest and it burn. That's a lesson you learn, coming straight from the slums. And it don't stop till we get full freedom.
Yo, yeah, you need help, officer?
Die, die, die.
Yo, you got him?
Hell yeah, I got him.
Alright, that's what's up, nigga.
Let's ride to the north side, nigga. Dip out, dip out, dip out.
Just when
Gracie Balagoon, Unta Harry, Rochelle McGee, Jahlil Muntakin, Hugo Yogi Pinnell, Herman Bell, Zaid Shakur, Asada Shakur, Nahanda Abiodun, Russell Maroon Schultz, George Jackson, Tariq Haskins, Matulu Shakur, Leonard Peltier, Jonathan Jackson, Shaka Sankofa, Bunchy Carter, Albert Nunn Washington, Reston Uhuru, Eddie Conway, Sundiata Okoli, the Black Liberation Army, Tupac Amaru Freedom Fighters, the Mau Mau, the Zapatistas, Black and Brown Power, yeah. Long live all soldiers. Uhuru, Chairman O'Malley.
A weak solidarity breaking team listener went down at the Trample the Poor, Not Another Yahoo High School. The school bully and the bully's very, very, very close friend, the principal, made an offer the smallest kid in the school couldn't refuse. See, the bully bashes the proverbial out of the smallest kid every day and steals her lunch and pocket money. And the bully and the principal know the bullying is 100% the fault of the smallest kid. She only has herself to blame. But despite that, they told her the bully would stop bashing the proverbial out of her if she gives him her lunch and pocket money every day voluntarily, and would only bash the proverbial if she didn't agree to the peace deal. Many of the other kids, including a kid called Albing Uzi, said they thought this was an inspired solution and praised the principal and the bully. For after all, on a number of occasions, they had urged the bully not to bash the smallest kid quite so proverbially, while at the same time providing him with the knuckle dusters. For they too knew the smallest kid was to blame and wouldn't have to be bullied if she hadn't complained about being bullied. Although the kid called Albing Uzi said he hadn't provided any knuckle dusters or even parts of knuckle dusters to the bully. And of course he hadn't, because he sent the knuckle duster parts to the knuckle duster manufacturer. Although this is the week that was, I hope you don't think that has anything to do with any development this week. A week when the perpetrator of the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation, and its very, very, very close friend and provider of the slaughter, destruction and genocide wherewithal, managed to announce a peace plan without any consultation with the non-land, non-people targets of the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation, and are even prepared to govern the non-land, non-people's non-land for them. And even more generous, the Zion slaughterers say they may even leave the non-land sometime in a timeless future when there are no non-land, non-people in the non-land. How could the non-land, non-people resist such an offer? And true blue was his courage under fire, fired up again, as Zion attacked and arrested peace activists on the open seas for threatening Zion's control of not just the non-land, non-peoples, non-land, but also their non-seas. Why, True Blue Aussie has pleaded with Benjamin Not Another Yahoo to allow consular access to the True Blue Aussies. Talk about getting tough. Yet, how's this for ingratitude at such courage? Julie Pullman-Webb, mother of Dr. Bianca Pullman-Webb, one of the True Blue Aussies, said she was outraged by how the True Blue Aussie Department of Going Overseas all the time and being a perfectly good little prefect responded to the, quote, kidnapping of True Blue Aussie citizens after she contacted its crisis hotline. True Blue Aussie's conduct is reprehensible, utterly devoid of responsibility toward its citizens as laid out in its own policy, and totally in breach of its international obligations under UN conventions, not to mention any shred of morality. What ingratitude for all True Blue Aussies doing not to condemn its very, very, very close friend Zion. On that issue of we do not send weapons to Zion, the parts we do send but deny don't know, if you heard an interview a week or so ago with the Minister for Going Overseas, etc., Penny Left Wing, asked about the parts we send but don't send verbally made the most expert circus contortionist look very ordinary indeed. On great lovers of truth, of liberty, freedom and democracy, Lord Rupert of Wapping's No Facts News has had a couple of big weeks, kicking off with a US of the UN of the US of the world anchor, as they call them, appropriate actually, because they drag any semblance of balance and objectivity to the depths, anchor said on a show called No Facts and Friends, mentally ill homeless people should be killed by lethal injection. Appropriately, his name is Brian Kilmeade. His co-anchor said, you can't give them a choice. Either you take the resources we're going to give you, or you decide that you're going to be locked up in jail. To which Kilmeade intervened, or voluntarily lethal injection or something. Just kill them. My word, offers you can't refuse are big this week, aren't they? And we can but imagine the collective IQ of the friends of No Facts and Friends. Back here on a Sunday night No Facts program hosted by a woman described as a conservative commentator. Not sure they need to tell us that when it comes to No Facts News, but a guest described as a social media personality called Ryan Williams, obviously a very, very funny man, turned up with strips of bacon on his shoulders because he had the audience in stitches. The terrorists are a charming lot, and they threaten to behead me every single day, so a little bit of protection. We've got to laugh, haven't we? This is the same Lord Rupert who daily denounces anti-Semitism running riot, anti-Semitism being any criticism of the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation. Like yesterday, Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin, a whole page about evil, their word, evil, anti-Semitism, but not one word about the attack on the Peace Flotilla. Thank goodness Melbourne City has a more humane attitude to homeless people. No lethal injection for it. It's budgeted $2 million to help the homeless by hiring 10 security thugs to move them on. Predictably, homeless services say they weren't consulted. Why should they be? And the usual long-haired commie black armband brigade are carrying on without any consideration for decent people who have to see the homeless. Decent people represented by the business community, for instance, expressed by a DeGrave Street cafe owner who praised the council for trying to address the problem of people feeling unsafe in the CBD. He didn't clarify who was feeling unsafe, but I think we know who he meant. Suggestions that telecommunications, well, occasional telecommunications when it's not telecommunicating corporation, copped this no, reduced investment in its True Blue Aussie mobile networks last year by a mere $237 million, were totally unrelated to the not telecommunicating copped this no, assured us. Nor that the network management system is based in India, which just shows what an international good corporate citizen it is, doing its bit for Indian workers whom we're sure it so cares about. It has a history of not telecommunicating, like that 2023 national outage, ultimately forcing the ousting of then-supremo Kelly Bayer Rosmarin, real name. Well, this week, Kelly was appointed supremo at insurance, financial services, retirement, disability and aged care services giant True Blue Aussie Unity, which eulogised, Kelly possesses the values, alignment and credentials to advance the group's vision, etc., showing she's a real corporate high flyer. Just a touch unfortunate, therefore. Not that Kelly will give a stuff as she settles into the True Blue Aussie Unity plush desk in the plush office, but same day as her new big job was announced, huge ads appeared in the press, published by order of the Federal Court of True Blue Aussie, following proceedings instituted by the ACCC, the Federal Court has declared by consent that copped this mobile proprietary limited no, contravened the True Blue Aussie consumer law by engaging in unconscionable conduct in relation to many consumers who were vulnerable or experiencing disadvantage, including First Nations True Blue Aussies from regional, remote and very remote parts of True Blue Aussie. The unconscionable conduct included instances where cop this, etc. And there's a long list of unconscionables. Just a pity that possessing the values, alignment and credentials corporate high-flyer Kelly was the supremo overseeing all that unconscionable. Copped this no, no, no might sloganize yes when its performance says no, but it shows a dedicated devotion to no in one area, tax, or lack of. For copped this no, no, no joined the long list of huge, profitable, good corporate citizens who again paid no tax whatever. Netflix the profits, for instance. Turns out, like many of them, their true blue Aussie profits just happen to turn up in low or no tax havens. Not suggesting for one second there's any tax avoidance, tax dodging. We know because they tell us they meet their legal tax obligations. The tax office boasted that 1,253 of our biggest corporate citizens paid no tax last year, and this year it dropped to a mere 1,136 paying no tax. Boasted. We'll start cheering when that figure hits zero. Zero will be the amount of those thousands of years of terra nullius non-land, non-people rock art remaining on the Barra Peninsula after another great responsible corporate citizen Woodside with profits gets through with its 45 years of gas, gas, gas as part of its commitment to transition from gas, gas, gas. Clearly the transition can't be rushed, unlike the approval for the transition. We've already referred to the socialist courage under fire and displayed again, as we've mentioned in recent weeks, that as Woodside with Supremo Meg O'Neill before profits complained that the conditions placed on approval for 45 years of gas, gas, gas were too onerous and did not conform with the science, whatever that is, the courageous socialists and the Minister for Environmental Gas, 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 Murray Swatz the Environment, would not cave in, not buckle at the knees. Well, listener, in a rarity for the week that was, we were wrong. Hard as it is to believe, the socialists did cave in, did buckle at the knees. As documents released this week show, they knew industry was destroying the rock art. Well, it'd be hard to find anyone who didn't know that. Yet watered down the conditions to accommodate Woodside with. I find there is a likely risk of serious and irreversible damage to the petroglyphs as a result of omissions from the proposed action, Murray said. Well, Murray, there's one way round that. But no, no. I believe, he went on, the approval has struck the right balance between Aboriginal heritage protection and economic factors. Wonder which of those carried the most weight. Heritage protection, but irreversible damage? Still all's well. Megan the Woodside with shareholders are laughing all the way too. Finally, the Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin again getting priorities right, covering the big news of the day. A full P1, and since then, day after day of poor Nicole's marriage breakdown. This is the most important thing happening in the world today, I thought. And then I had a most dreadful thought. You're going to be shocked, listener, but I thought, I don't give a stuff. Good morning.
Standing Together for Public Housing is a campaign to stop the privatisation of public housing. Come to a public meeting at 6pm on the 23rd of October at the Capitol Theatre to have your say on how to maintain and build more public housing instead of knocking it down. 6pm Thursday, 23rd of October at the Capitol Theatre, 113 Swanson Street, Melbourne. For more details, see the Standing Together for Public Housing Facebook page. The Public Housing Campaign is a 3CR supporter.
You're back with Annie and Tobias on Solidarity Breakfast on 3CR on your community radio station. And we're going to actually go to the whole issue of Burra Pub right now. A perfect segue from the wonderful Kevin Healy and his This Is The Week That Was. I went to the socialist the Eco Socialism Conference in September, and it had a bevy of information and stuff like that. Oh, and also, I guess we should have done some language warning. We've been terribly naughty this week.
So naughty this week. We had a mature, we should have had an M15
yeah,
at
exactly.
the start of our program.
Yeah, that's right.
Coarse language.
Yeah, we're just flippant, aren't we? And of course, we're going to go to Raylene Cooper first up. Raylene Cooper is part of Defend Our Songlines, and it is her home country, the Burra Pup, and she's been a warrior for her country, and she's going to open up the discussion about the whole process towards this abominable decision by the Monster for the Environment, who has decided that balancing the desires of international corporate interests is so much more important than the history of civilization as we know it. Which is what the rock art actually represents. It's irreplaceable. And there needs to be a little bit of language warning here too.
Thank you for being patient. Weiba Wandewa, everyone. Obviously, my name is Raylene Cooper. I've been campaigning against Woodside, oil and gas, state government, federal government, well, anyone who keeps trying to, you know, stop me from doing what I'm doing. Look, I haven't prepped, so please bear with me. Obviously, this is a great photo because I love this photo because it's the photo that was taken in Sydney when we had our first hearing with the state, with federal government, Murray Watts. And it was basically after he had announced when he became, position and chair role with the Water Environment Minister federally. And he came out 2 weeks later and basically said, I'm going to, give way to the unapproved Northwest Shelf. Well, excuse the French, but I was like, fuck no, that's not happening in my time. And so I got really, really, really pissed off about it. And I think I was more pissed off than I was hurt. Because it was like, who the hell do you think you are and how dare you? I've been waiting 3.5 years in February 22. I had submitted to the federal government, and Tanya Pulpasek at that time was in power in that seat, Water Environment Minister. And yeah, they should have sacked her because she did a 360 on everything that her role and her title and duty was. Everything, just 360 on it and just did nothing. So realistically, I would have sacked her a long time ago. Anyway, she came and spent an hour with me after spending hours with Murubdruga. Back in 23, and I'd like to say it was a great meeting, but it wasn't. She really wasn't interested, and I think it was just a photo opportunity, really. And it seems to be like that way with a lot of politicians. And anyway, in saying that, nothing was done. Obviously, Murray Watts gets in the seat, and this is what he states, and it started from there. I then had been speaking with some close allies, behind the scenes, and we spoke about how we were going to deal with this situation, and I can't allow this to happen because it didn't feel right, and if it doesn't feel right, it's not right, yeah? So some legal teams started speaking with some legals, and obviously the mandamus conversation started, and it was basically to force the minister into... Like, it was an unreasonable of them to wait so long to make a decision on my Section 10. And in the meantime, while everyone was sitting on their fat asses, in the ASFA office and the ASFA team that was supposed to be looking at it, meanwhile, Maingora, the country, was being destroyed, literally. So they started the Perdaman project, they put the causeway in. It was just became so intense at home, and I'd go there frequently, take my dogs and, my family, and right where they are if you haven't been there. So obviously it's been such a big thing, going back and forth, and obviously, with Woodside 2000, we won the case when they were basically, I had to prove to NOPSEMA, federal government, that I, you know, am relevant to start the consultation processes. I'm a relevant person to be speaking for this place. Like, I had to prove basically in a native title process that this is who I am. I have got relevance. This is what I'm fighting for. And so we went to court for that, and obviously then the next, it was obviously stated then, I was in Melbourne doing a conference, and my legal team at the time, EDO, had contacted me, and it took a long time for them to, you know, we built this trust up, and for EDO to basically, I'm like, listen, I know what they're going to do next. They are going to do this. We need to get an injunction organised. Really, it took a long time for me to, you know, for them to pursue this, because they're like, we need more evidence. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I know how they're so predictable. We know what they're like. And so basically, I was fortunate enough for them to get the paperwork and everything organised. And obviously, I got the phone call in Melbourne. They're going, look, they're going to start the seismic testing. And I'm like, well, you got the paperwork, make your way to the court and submit it. So that was, I guess, a foot in front. Yes, we won the case, the Woodside, to stop the seismic testing, and NOPSEMA basically failed, and they're still failing. And the information over this last 3.5 years, because I'm still in consultation processes with Woodside, and obviously the Trunkline one was the last, and this is basically for prepping the Northwest Shelf Star. There's nothing there. There's no more oil or gas there. There's nothing. Anyway, so in saying that, we won the case. 2 weeks later, they, you know, just juggled a few words in the NOPSEMA, environmental plan, and bang, it was on again. So it's a machine that just keeps going. And government is, look, over in Western Australia, there is no, everybody knows, and whoever doesn't know, then they got blinkers on or they just don't want to know. But that place is run by the likes of Woodside. Right, by the likes of Chevron's, by the likes of the Santos's, by the likes of all oil and gas.
Thanks, Ray. The campaign I've been involved in is Disrupt Burrup Hub, which ties in hugely. In fact, we ride the coattails of Save Our Songlines. So natural gas is put forward by companies and governments as this transition fuel. You might have heard this rhetoric. The concept here is that by shifting to gas rather than coal will significantly reduce emissions from the more crude fossil fuels and provide a nice intermediary step between our current energy system and the new net zero future, which we all agree needs to happen. And through this justification, we see politicians like WA Premier Roger Cook admitting that WA's emissions will need to continue climbing in the short term. And he faces no real backlash. Like, there's a few angry activists like me who yell about it, but otherwise he doesn't
chase him up the hill.
Yeah. but it's all part of this transition plan that Liberal governments have put forward. But this plan is obviously ill-equipped to address the issue. So the IPCC's sixth assessment report, published in 2021, made clear the scale of this problem. It highlighted that government's plans was likely to result in warming closer to 3 degrees above pre-industrial levels by 2100. And indeed, in order to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius at 2100 with no overshoot, I quote, deep, rapid, and sustained reductions in greenhouse gas emissions would be needed. Certainly the approval of the largest fossil fuel project in the Southern Hemisphere, which Woodside's Burrup Hub is, would not be keeping in that recommendation, I'm sure you all agree. What is worse is in all of these recommendations and data published, it was all occurred before a massive expansion in fossil fuel investments and approvals all around the world following the coronavirus lockdowns and Russia's invasions of Ukraine. So in the coronavirus lockdown, we obviously had this global recession, supply chains shut down, and in the wake of that, governments were really keen to get the economy back up and running. So they massively needed extra fuel to fuel this expansion of the global supply chain. Mm-hmm. And then, just as that was kicking off, Russia invaded Ukraine, and suddenly a massive massive supply of fossil fuel energy to Western Europe, which is a huge economy, was cut off due to sanctions placed on Russia. Mm-hmm. And because of this combination of extraordinary market forces, the fossil fuel sector made $4 trillion in profit in 2022. And just to put that in context, that's more than the entire GDP of Japan. So we're talking about massive amounts of money. And of course, what are capitalists going to do with this money that they make? When they're making a heap of money in fossil fuels, they're going to reinvest that in more fossil fuels.
Yeah.
In this context, the need for climate activism remains imperative for our very survival. And that brings me to disrupt Burrup Hub. The Burrup Hub is not one fossil fuel project. It's four fossil fuel projects. And then there's also, as Ray's been fighting against, some fertilizer plants that sort of get their fuel and get their material from the fossil fuel projects that are there. So we've got two gas plants that process the gas, which is Woodside, Northwest Shelf, and Pluto LNG. And then we've got two offshore gas extraction projects, which is Scarborough Gas, and then 1,000 kilometers away off of Scott Reef, we've got the Browse Basin. And where we're at right now is Scarborough Gas is approved and in construction. I think it's due to open pretty soon in the next couple of years. Murray Watt has just to approve the continued function of the Northwest Shelf gas plant until 2070. But the only way it seems that that is going to happen on a feasible level is if they're allowed to extract from Browse. So Browse is sort of seen as this critical part that we need to stop. And so my involvement with the Disrupt Burrup Hub campaign is looking to stop this industrial expansion on the Burrup Peninsula, also known as Murujuga. So even though Browse is it's hundreds of kilometres, almost 1,000 kilometres away, the stopping of Browse is an integral part of stopping this industrial expansion. Without Browse, this doesn't go ahead. And look, Ray's touched on the cultural impacts and the impacts on the rock art. And, you know, I can't speak, being a settler, I can't speak on, like, the deep emotional bond that is there. But what I will say is, like, when you're there, and I'm not a spiritual person, I'm someone that's very, very tied to the material world, but you feel it. Like, this is rock art that has existed for 50,000 years. We're talking about since the dawn of time, people have been creating stories here. And you're looking at this rock art, you can hear it in the background, and then you turn around and there's literally these giant machines that are just cutting through the earth. They are ripping this country up. And yeah, you don't have to be spiritual, you feel that. What this highlights is sort of an underlying principle of capitalism, right? The extraction and degradation of resources in one area and the concentration of the benefits from that extraction in another. And we talk about global imperialism and the divide between the global north and the global south, but I think Murujuga kind of highlights how that functions in countries as well as between countries. So we see the creation of these relative peripheries, and it's necessary for the current capitalist class. We see it in this local scale through underfunding of low socioeconomic suburbs at the expense of gentrified city centres, mm-hmm. through to the global scale of separation of the so-called global north and global south countries. The targets of periphery are people who have been dehumanised, and this is most apparent in Woodside as well as state and federal government's lack of concern for traditional custodian history and culture that is quite literally being erased by these chemical emissions. The reason this happens ties back to the Marxist concept of metabolism. And it's a simple idea, right? The idea that what you take through your extraction of natural resources literally takes something. And that is taking away something that has been put there by natural processes that are often incredibly slow. And capitalism requires ongoing growth and extraction at an increasing rate. And so the only way that we can account for the problems and consequences that this causes is by shifting the problem away to other areas. So this is what we call the metabolic rift, this disconnect between how quickly things regenerate and what capitalism needs to extract. And this has been touched on by eco-socialist thinkers like Kohei Saito and John Bellamy Foster. And I think Disrupt Burrup Hub campaigners, without being explicit about it, do intuitively understand the injustice that is at play here. And while they're not being explicitly anti-capitalist in their messaging, their direct actions do seek to highlight this injustice and show how ordinary people can disrupt this destructive industry. And I think there are two really successful demonstrations of this that I want to highlight. The first is an action performed by Joanna Partica, which sort of kicked off the campaign, where she spray painted the Woodside logo on Fred McCubbin's artwork, Down on His Luck. So Fred McCubbin's artwork is hanging in the West Australian Art Gallery, and it's seen as sort of a masterpiece of colonial artwork. By painting Woodside's logo on it, it sort of draws the connection between the damage that's being done here, and I think it was really, really effective and a fantastic way to kick off the campaign. the second one I want to highlight, although, you know, we can't forget Petrina's locking on to block actual production on Burrup Road, but which was awesome. But the second one I want to highlight was performed by Kristen Morrissey, where she let off some gas that is used to alert miners to danger, but she set off this gas in the Perth offices of the Woodside office, which was great. The symbolism is fantastic, of course, but what's even better is that she actually evacuated those Woodside offices for hours, and so we've actually like made a direct impact. She shut off the entire work for 4 hours there.
I just wanted to make a point that Raylene was talking about and Maz as well, saying I myself as well was not a particularly spiritual person. I started the campaign probably about 8 years ago down in Perth. I hadn't visited the rock art as a kid. You know, we've been up to Exmouth and Shark Bay and Coral Bay and Ningaloo Reef and loved that as a kid as a holiday. So my initial was, you know, I heard, oh my God, that's being destroyed. That's like, you know. So looked into the, you know, the figures of it all and climate change, you know, from an academic point of view, also concerned citizen point of view. But it wasn't until, as Raylene said, we'd been up there, and it was funny because Raylene at the time had no idea that we'd been campaigning down in Perth as well. So it's a major part of the fight. We need that solidarity. We need to spread the word. And when she heard, so at the time, she was Raylene was part of the Aboriginal board there, the custodians, and we almost called off the first action. Because we were going to interrupt this meeting they were having. And so we were trying to be, you know, polite and cultural, respectful. And when we met Raylene and she realised what we were doing, she was like, fuck that, you go for it. I'm quitting the Black Force. Like, beautiful call out. And at the time, you know, I was pretty cynical, but she's like, nah, take your shoes off, get your feet in the dirt, feel that dirt, and then listen to the words of her nephew. And just this beautiful call out, which was basically saying, these people are on our side. Protect them, look out for them. They have our permission to be here and do what we're doing. Mm. And when we, and again to highlight the absolute disrespect, well, capitalism is alienating, isn't it? It alienates us from our connection to nature. And in the court case, the first court case, it was horrific. We had it up in Karratha. So as Raylene says, our entire state is captured.
Yep.
So we were facing, you know, the cops, all the workers. You know, Karratha is a FIFO, it's a mining town. Everyone's there for Woodside, works for Woodside in some capacity. The magistrate, the whole justice system, because it's isolated, they've got a circuit of judges. So the judges know all the cops and the prosecutors. And what got me, it was just horrific, the treatment of Raylene. So she's there as a custodian. You know, this is, and she gave this heartfelt testimony explaining the connection between the people and Murujuqa and Songlines. It's so much more than just, you know, the quality of the water and the air. It's the religion. It's, you know, the earth is the mother, and you know we're hurting it. And as she was giving this testimony, I was, you know, bawling, and the magistrate and the police prosecutor were rolling their eyes, like, you know, here we go again. And then he had the gall to say, to turn to Raylan and say, oh, well, that's all well and good, but ultimately you're not a scientist and you have no authority to speak on the rocker. Yeah. Oh, and that was the...
And what happened in the meantime? What was happening out online?
Oh, and
just to top it off.
Yeah, to top it off. So there was a lunch break and we hear the police have actually at Raylan's house, raiding her house on supposed drug raid. So her children came home to find the police in the house. They broke in. The dogs were terrorised. They were all cowed and all the rest of it. So we tore back from the railings, like, get me home, we need to go on ahead. So I was pulled over by the police on the way, right? So went through the car, took all my... We get to Raylene's house, this cop's in her driveway, and Raylene's like, let me into my house, what's going on? And this cop says to her, this isn't your house, this is my crime scene.
And they found, they found nothing
but a bomb. The cop's saying to me, as it, you know, like, went through all my car, and, you know, I'm a respectable teacher, this was the first time I'd done it, you know. The cop hands me my license plate. He says, yeah, you're all good. And I said, yeah, I know I'm good. What the fuck is, you know, what you guys are doing here? It was the entire, as I said, we felt the weight of the entire state on my back. I felt like pretty run out of town. And Raylan lived that. As I said, everyone, you know, they're born into that struggle. You know, you have, I can escape back to Perth and, you know, get a lawyer or whatever. But Raylan lives that every day. And it was just...
What about that? What a story. What a story. That was stories from the front line, and that was from eco-socialism. And if you really wanted to get the blood and guts of the fight for Burrup Hub, you can feel it right there. That's the end of the program. Thanks for being with me, Tabar.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to you next week. We're going to go out with Through the Trees, King Stingray, Mighty Band. Oh,
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.